Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Dear listener, welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we gather together around a table and we talk about genre movies, the trash movies, because as Pauline Kael so wisely said, films are so often good art. If you cannot appreciate the good trash, what's the point? Or great art.
Rarely great art?
Rarely. So
you said often.
Oh, often. So rarely.
That kind of, defeats the purpose of the quote.
Yeah, that's not often.
No, it's rare.
Less than often.
It's less than often.
Quite.
You get the idea.
So we're going to appreciate a little Kung Fu tonight. We're going to look at a little movie called Fearless, but we got to do some introductions first. My name is Dustin Sells, and to my right...
I am Arthur Gordon, and as Dustin gets older, I keep reverting into childhood as I began playing Magic the Gathering recently.
That's so wonderful. And to my left...
My name is Dalton Stewart. Soon, as in we're a week out from me having a bachelor's degree in sociology... And you are no match for my Cobra strike.
My wushu is far greater than your wushu.
My wushu.
My master will kick your master's hiney.
We'll teach you to fear my father's wushu.
So, before we go on, thank you. That's Roscoe the dog. He's also here with us this evening. And we're going
to party, Roscoe.
Our live audience is downgraded considerably.
They're a couple of dogs, am I right?
Meow.
Puns.
So, let's begin, as we always do, with a little bit of a synopsis of the film before we do our thumbs up, thumbs down, bit of review, because it's not really a review show, and then we'll move on into the important stuff, which is analysis. So, Mr. Arthur Gordon, voice the cinema, if you would, please.
This film tells the story of a Chinese martial arts master, played by Jet Li. Jet Li's character was the founder and spiritual guru of the Jin Wu Sports Federation.
What a ridiculous synopsis.
That's a terrible synopsis. Yeah, it's kind of awful.
IMDb, you fail.
Yep.
But that's kind of what the movie's about.
Yeah,
so I guess,
I mean, maybe.
Sort of.
It does tell a story.
Well, you know,
this
guy. Honestly, though, plot. It's a kung fu movie.
People get punched in the face.
That's mostly what happens.
And on the road to that, the good guy learns something about himself.
Yes, there is that.
So let's begin with our just general sense of taste so that you, the listener, can kind of know where we, the Good Trash Genre Cast, are coming from. I begin to my left, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What you like? What worked? What didn't?
Thumbs sideways. Fearless is a perfectly serviceable martial arts film. The fight choreography is very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very solid fight choreography. You know, it's so painfully obvious, I think, when you watch a film about where martial arts and fighting in general is central to the plot. I think it becomes very obvious when you watch a film where the actors are not professional martial artists, and then you watch a film where the lead characters are, you know what they're doing in real life. I think it becomes really just, it bumps the quality of a fight scene up so much.
And yet,
now you can
acting quality
exactly
proportionally
drops. Typically, I won't say that as a rule. You know, I will say there's ways to work around that. I think there are some films that work around, still present very good fight scenes, very technical fight scenes without their actors being, you know, super proficient, but
Kickboxer 2
is a great example.
Not that.
That's funny. But you know, Fearless is very meditative, honestly, which is something that's very common in Chinese wushu films. You find that they make a point to address some of the spirituality that bleeds over from Buddhism into Chinese martial arts. But, you know, it's just kind of an oddly paced film, really. There's kind of bookends of martial arts sandwiching Jet Li's character, whose name I can't even begin to attempt to pronounce.
Yeah, so that guy.
Jet Li's character. His character kind of goes on this spiritual journey throughout the bulk of the film, really, and that I'd say bulk, probably the middle section, the second act, into the third act. But really, it's kind of oddly structured.
I don't think it really has acts. I think it's kind of a Chinese thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It does kind of flow through and within itself. But, you know, he's okay. I don't know. I know Arthur isn't very learned in martial arts films. Dustin, I'm not sure about yourself.
I've seen a few.
You've seen a few? I've seen quite a few as well.
He was there at their peak in popularity.
That would have been the mid-70s. He's old.
That's
he's so mean. Anyway, I say all that to say this, listener. I don't know how into martial arts films you are. If you've seen a lot, though, you've seen this one, and you've seen it done better, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's fair enough, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Mr. Arthur Gordon, the uninitiate, the less-than-versed kung fu movie watcher. Tell us, did this work for you?
Yeah, this on the ladder of film genre, at the very bottom of the ladder are two genres. One is exploitation film, and one is kung fu.
Next to exploitation?
Incorrect.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Your cinema is invalid, sir.
Your criticism is no match for my criticism.
Just because I haven't wasted my life watching crap films.
Martial arts movies are, sir. They are art.
Just because the word art is in the genre title does not make them fine. Regardless.
Well played.
If this was the film I was hoping to win me over to the genre, it did not.
I'm sorry.
Win that battle. I think it is a... Well, this is going to come from my inexperience in the genre. I think it is a well-made film for the most part. It looks good. The fight scenes are really well. They do some really fun stuff, I think, through the movie with the fight scenes that I'll get onto a little later. But, you know, if this movie is the one that I was hoping that would pull me in to a whole genre, much like Black Hawk Down and the war movies a couple weeks ago, I don't think it did its job. And it's not a knock on the film, because I think it is a well-made film, but I'm not pumped to go explore a bunch of more, a lot more kung fu movies
now. I will show you the way.
Okay.
My wushu is great, sir. But, the thing about the disciple has to be willing to go because they've been impressed by what they've seen. And I think what Arthur's saying there is totally valid. Because, in the end, this movie is, if we want to go ahead and use exploitation as kind of a framing genre metaphor for this, this is the grindhouse of it. It is just, you've churned out yet another very generic, very simplistic kung fu movie. How do we solve our problems of racism, intolerance, colonialism? By fighting. Because that works nowhere.
Except in,
video games.
Turn of the century China.
That's not true, though.
Well, I think there's something inherent in the way that the Chinese look at fighting. Particularly the Chinese martial arts. The nature of wushu. Wushu being an umbrella term for all Chinese martial arts. Kung fu is also the common that came to be used in the West and is now accepted in China as well as the kung fu term for all Chinese martial arts. The thing with the Chinese philosophy in regard to martial arts, you have to understand the root of it, which is Buddhist monks.
Mm-hmm.
Shaolin monks in the mountains of China created martial arts as a way to better oneself, as a way to know thyself, as a way to explore spirituality of both of yourself and others. It was not inherently meant for self-defense or combat, although it certainly served those purposes. It was, in a sense, inherently supposed to be a fluid meditation.
Sure.
So I think that's really important when looking at the way in this film, and really a lot of Chinese martial arts films, the way a fight is approached, the way what can be solved through martial arts.
Well, I think what you're saying is valid, and the way that narratives are constructed to show the resolution of difficulty in a simple fight scene is not limited to the East. We see that also in the West, where we see gunfights in the OK Corral, and those things are lifted up when we have a high noon at the main street of a town, and that's what's really going to settle the crime issue in this town. And I'm going to say that just like in our own much belied and much beguiled genre of the Western, this movie also suffers from the same sort of oversimplification that most viewers are going to pick up on. Well, and there are more depthful and there are more thoughtful versions of a Western, Anna the Kung Fu film.
Some of them starring this movie star.
Absolutely.
Which we'll talk about later.
But this particular film is definitely middle of the road. Just
it is.
It's just another movie on the shooting schedule for the studio. It's just another chance to just send something else out there. We got Jet Li, who's got a name, who's going to make us some money. But you know, the movie itself shot beautifully. I think there's some
it looks good.
There's some lovely shots in the movie. But as I said before we began recording, the dialogue sounds like fortune cookies.
Yeah.
And you know, that's probably
not just because it's in Chinese. Am I right?
Sorry.
But no, you're right. It's very
the subtitling.
It's pocket wisdom.
Yeah. It really is. And so, you know, I mean, it reads sort of like the pop culture version of the Book of Proverbs, and not in a good way. And so that's a problem.
You mean chicken noodle soup for the soul?
Something like that, exactly. And so for the most part, I'm going to go, I love me some Jet Li. I love me some Kung Fu. It looked awesome. My 9-year-old with asthma watched this movie with me,
mm-hmm.
and it made him feel powerful, and that I love. But other than that, meh. That's about what I have to say. A thumb firmly sideways also,
yeah.
Like Mr. Dalton Stewart. So, there you go. You kind of know where we're coming from. Let's move on to some analysis, though, because this movie, although generic, although conventional in many ways, is rife with things to analyze, and so I know my my co-hosts have a lot to say, and I also have something to say as well. And I begin to my right with Mr. Arthur Gordon. What do you say, sir?
One of the first things that we picked up on, we were kind of hit on, is the story structure. I like the way it's bookended. I think I was wondering where it was going to go, and because I'd read a synopsis about the the tournament or whatever
cheater.
That he's entering.
I'm just kidding.
I will break your hip.
Right, with his wushu.
With my wushu.
With
my wushu
Walker.
Guy pan.
Your wushu.
I think there's some rice.
Your wushu guy pan.
Anyway.
Oh my god. This is vaguely racist. $100.
So is your Billy Cosby over there.
So what am I doing with you?
Joe! The story structure that I do enjoy, I think is an interesting way to go with the story. And that's one of those things. It felt to me more sophisticated than what I had envisioned as a kung fu film.
In terms of structure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought there was some, again, I have a completely probably different aspect of this film than you guys. I thought there was some interesting character stuff here. I think it's just a solid film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a bad film. I don't think it was a great film, but I think it was solid in everything it tried to do. It encompasses a lot of those great themes and morals, you know, the pride comes before the fall and, you know, look before you leap and grace is hard to exercise, but it's a powerful tool to use. We see these endearing, forever relevant motifs well at work here, and it plays into that proverb, that fortune cookie aspect of the film, I think, Dustin's hitting on. One of the things, and it's in that last fight, I think there's a beautiful juxtaposition of the music, which becomes dramatic, with the fight scene, in which they remove almost all sound effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have to interrupt you, because I shed a small tear during that moment, because my 9-year-old boy picked up on it.
Really?
And I thought, I'm
That's
raising
awesome.
Such a good little nerdling. Oh,
that's
wonderful. Go ahead.
So awesome.
One
so
of
awesome.
Us, one of us. Level 28 mage.
Critical hit.
And this this is one of those things, you know, Dustin doesn't always like it, but it reemphasizes how important the music aspect can be in a mm-hmm. film and how that can control our emotion, how we, you know, read into the narrative of the film.
You mean manipulate.
You know, tomato, tomato, really. One of the other things I liked about this movie, and it's kind of one of the things that worried me, there are some films, especially here in America, that you go to watch it, and it's an action film, or it's a, you know, a fight film, or whatever, and it feels like everything that isn't in one of those big action sequences or one of those big fight films is just filler. There's not a lot of, you know, energy or effort put into anything else but those fight scenes. And I think what I liked about this film is there was a little more energy put in here. I was thinking, I think it was Colombiana I reviewed one time, the... I can't even think of her name.
Zoe Saldana.
There it is.
Isn't she Uhura?
Yes.
Uhura.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
But in that movie, it felt like everything was just elite. Like, the only things that mattered were the big
action set pieces.
Yeah, set pieces there. And so I like that about this movie, that it didn't just, like, they tried to add, I think, a little something to it to kind of spread it and pace it and make it feel more important than, you know, what it probably truly is. But I was worried getting into this that it was just going to be, oh, fight scene, oh, fight scene, oh, fight scene, and nothing else would matter. And I think they did take a little time and effort here to try and, I mean, this is probably somebody that at least Jet Li respects.
Mm-hmm, you know? Definitely. Mm-hmm.
And so I think they wanted to try and pay some respects to his memory with this film. And I think they tried to do that through the story here. So.
Well done, sir. Well, thank you very much for that. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what analysis do you bring?
Well, in sociology, there's the concept of a macro outlook and a micro outlook. And what these things mean is looking at the big picture and looking at the small picture. And I think with the film Fearless, I think that's something we really have at play is there's the macro view of this film and the micro view of this film. On the macro, this film is very much about national pride.
Mm-hmm.
And pride in one's country and pride in the ability to do your duty to one's country and to gain respect for your country. And I think that's a very interesting thing, particularly, you know, where this film is coming from. Historically, China has a very complicated history with the rest of the world. And I think that it's a very interesting look at that history and that relationship, particularly during this colonial period, in which it cannot be denied that the Chinese people were being used quite a bit. But this film is also about more than the big picture. It's also about the small picture. And I think probably that's where more of its focus lies, is in the look at the character that Jet Li plays and who he is as a man and his personal growth. And it's all about this idea that one has to master themselves, which, again, is a lot of what the philosophy behind Wushu is about. It's very much it's very much interwoven in what Wushu is about.
Is it more Confucian or Buddhist, do you think?
Wushu inherently?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's complicated, I think.
Yeah.
You know, this is coming from me having more of a knowledge of the history of Chinese martial art than their religion. But, I mean, you have Confucianism being the first real, if you want to say religion, it's more of a philosophy, but religion of China.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondarily, you have Buddhism coming in and really kind of overtaking Confucianism in a lot of ways. But the practice of Buddhism in China, the Buddhism, if you want to get real pretentious and up your own ass, the practice thereof is really influenced by Confucianism.
Sure.
And I think it's probably more Buddhist than Confucius. My understanding of Confucianism is about duty to others, and that kind of plays into the national pride, and duty to the family, duty mm-hmm. to the king. Whereas Buddhism is about knowing thyself and really mastering your wants and your impulses. And I think that's really what his character's arc is about, is understanding his pride, where his pride comes from. And, you know, this idea that he spent this early part of his life looked down on by everyone around him, so he has this need to prove himself. And again, this is really where this micro-sociological outlook comes into play, is looking at Jet Li's character and his growth from, you know, wanting people to respect him, and then when people come to respect him, he thinks that fear and respect are the same thing,
mm-hmm.
And then kind of circling back around to realizing that respect is more than about I can kick you harder than you can kick me. And I think that's really, you know, there's not a whole lot going on in this film, really. But I think what is going on is kind of interesting in terms of, again, the interplay between duty to the nation and duty to itself. I think that's pretty interesting.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, what I bring to the table is an interesting part two or sequel to what I brought to the table last week.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I think Marxist analysis is something we have to bring to this film because, honestly, you know, any country in which you make a film, the ideology of said country is going to come forward.
Certainly.
And, you know, one thing I think that Marxism, again, beneficially teaches us, whether we are into Marxism or not, is the idea of hegemony. This idea that the state creates these apparatuses that will influence your ideology through the art, the stories, the novels, whatever, the media that comes out around you. And so as you might see Marxist analysis of a Hollywood film making you believe in some sort of capitalist ideology, I think you see the exact same sort of thing going on with Jet Li's Fearless, where you see this very Maoist, which is Chinese, version of Marxism. You see the elevation of the agrarian life when he has a little respite scene.
Learns the importance of farming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very good point.
And so the bougie, very, very bougie Jet Li's character, who is, you know, of a family and of a clan, and, you know, he learns the value of the farming and of the people. And so that's kind of where he finds his soul, which is very Maoist. Not so much Leninist or Stalinist. Also, you see this idea of the, you know, the sacrificing of the self for the sake of the movement, the United Front. Unite all China together, you know, so that we can oppose, which, honestly, the imperial colonial threat needed to be opposed in some way or another. Again, regardless of one's own political ideology, that is certainly something that's not positive and certainly something that's bad.
Oh, absolutely.
And but, you know, I think everyone's watching this going, and that's what General Mao did for us. And that's precisely the sort of unity of the people, you know, the stand up, stand firm, concluding scene. We won't spoil this ending of a fight scene. Let's just say there's a big fight with a big boss at the end. Shocker! And during that scene, there is this kind of united people standing up for the one man, standing for a united Chinese front, which, again, sounds much like General Mao. And so what we see is that ideology has embedded itself in what is a standard kung fu movie, which were made in Hong Kong when Hong Kong was still free from Chinese rule and under the thumb of British dictatorship. Let's not say that Hong Kong has ever been free. I'm just saying.
That would be inaccurate.
You've just traded your dictators. Nonetheless, what we find then is that the ideology has shifted from ruler to ruler, ideology to ideology, hegemony to hegemony, and we see that this movie is really just, it's a Maoist track.
Now, was this film produced in Hong Kong or China proper?
It was filmed in Hong Kong slash China.
Okay.
I stayed through the credits.
Okay.
Just because as I watched it, I thought, oh, my heavens.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a co-production.
It was. It was. And so you can bet the party had its influence in the way the film was made. And again, now, the particularly Maoist version of Marxism.
Now, for those of our listeners who might be less learned, and not that there's, you know, anything wrong with that.
Hong Kong, have the most learned audience. I don't know what you're talking about, but go ahead and explain.
In case, for those of you who might not be aware, Hong Kong has a very complicated relationship with China. The way it works is, as a port city, Hong Kong was leased from China by the Western powers of the time, being the United States, Great Britain, I believe, Japan as well.
And mostly the UK.
Primarily the UK, which is why so many people in Hong Kong speak English to this day. But by the powers that be at the time, Hong Kong was leased for 100 years, I believe.
Something like that.
And just recently, Hong Kong, within the last couple of decades, that lease went up. And obviously they didn't renew it because the world is a much different place now than it was 100 years ago. You don't just go leasing ports from countries. But Hong Kong retained a certain amount of independence from China proper. They still have their own currency, for example. They are less under the party's thumb in terms of self-expression.
To a degree.
I say less under its thumb, not that they are not under its thumb. Because, again, they do fall under China for certain things. But it's just Hong Kong is a very complicated relationship with China. And it's important to note that out that there is a – looking at art coming from Hong Kong versus coming from China, you are looking to.
And I would say that those kung fu movies of the 70s, those early Sammo Hung, those early Jackie Chan, and also Bruce Lee films, had a much more Western sort of influence coming out of Hong Kong, as opposed to now 2006, Jet Li working out of Hong Kong under a different sort of authority. And I would invite the analysis of our dear listeners to take a look at some of those earlier films and see that sort of capitalist Western sort of ideology that's being put forward by those earlier films versus what appears to my mind a very clearly Maoist strain of communist Marxism being portrayed in this particular film. And I find that to just be interesting. What it comes down to, gang, is that you've got to be aware that culture – and a Marxist said this, and I think they're right. Culture is the sense that everything that is supposed to be that way.
Life influences art, and art influences life.
And so art will always reflect that, as Dalton so eloquently put it. And so I invite the reader or the listener to be aware of that as you watch any film from any national cinema. Because when you do, you're going to find out that, guess what? The ideology, the dominant ideology of that country, you're going to find it in the movie. For the most part, there are, of course, you know, renegade upstarts.
I've got a couple of them on my list.
And
actually,
I love it when that happens. But this, I'm afraid, is the top of the line, you know, main headliner sort of just toeing the line of what the culture says. And so, yeah, that's what we have here with this particular film. So, let's go around the table. Let's do our shelf or trash, else or instead. I'm very excited to hear what my co-hosts have to say about that. Mr. Dalton Stewart, I'll begin with you.
It's been a while since I've said this, but I'm going to go ahead and say trash. Yeah.
Huh.
It's, again, as I said, it's a perfectly serviceable martial arts movie, but if you are like Arthur and have not gotten around to checking this genre out yet, you know, you don't need to. If you are a student of the martial art film and just love them and want to see it all, go ahead. I mean, it's a good one. But you know, you should not be in any hurry to see this movie. What I will say you should watch instead, I thought about Enter the Dragon, which is really a perfect entry point, historically, the history of martial art films, but also, just in terms of a good one. It's not too old, it's not too new, it's just kind of perfect. It's the explosion of kung fu films into the United States.
And Bruce Lee screaming like a cat.
And Bruce Lee screaming like a wah! It's awesome. It's Bruce Lee's most famous film, for those of you who are not aware of it. As with many martial arts films, it centers around a tournament. But I won't say anything else.
Amazing.
But it's awesome. It's cool. But what I decided to go with instead is Hero.
Another
Jet Li film that I think is just a much better film all around.
Agreed.
It more fully encompasses a lot of the things that Fearless is trying to say. And it's more interestingly constructed. It's more interestingly plotted. It's just an all-around better film. Hero is probably one of my favorite recent martial arts films of the last 10, 15, 20 years or so. I like it a lot. I highly recommend you check it out. So I would say skip Fearless, check out Hero.
Excellent, excellent. Mr. Arthur Gordon, shelf or trash, else or instead?
personally, I'd probably just, I'd go with Dalton and say trash. Maybe somebody else's shelf if you film.
Mm.
I think here. I wish we'd watched Hero because I feel like Arthur would be like really into kung fu if we'd watched Hero.
Well, here we are.
Too bad it wasn't streaming.
Netflix.
You let us down. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Elsa, instead, I would say instead watch, because it's one of the few I'm familiar with, Kung Fu Hustle.
Which
I had a lot of fun watching.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And was much superior to Kung Pao Enter the Fist, which I hated and despised.
Kung Pao Enter the Fist is a masterpiece.
And would, you know, if it came to Kung Pao or Hebrew Hammer, I would just kill myself.
That's how
that would work out. So regardless, the other one I would support, I'm going to bring it back to the States, I'm going to say Warrior. I like a lot of the things thematically it's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does a lot of...
It's a good film.
Some good stuff with the... You know, fighting for pride and
much
country
less
and
superior wushu.
Well, you know what? It's the world we live in. MMA and
I would watch MMA if it looked like the fights in Fearless. I'm just saying.
See, I grew up watching boxing with my grandpa.
Boxing I like.
And you know what? It's what killed my sport. And so I can't love it.
Yeah, I just don't like it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I would say, honestly, I'm going to say trash as well. I mean, we have a unified front.
Has that ever happened that we all trashed a movie?
We've all shelved one.
I know, that happens all the time.
Yeah, but I don't think we've ever all trashed one.
I don't remember.
What a rare occurrence.
Weird. Listener, if you're a big nerd, let us know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, if there are any good trash fanatics. Nerds.
You know, I know you're out there. I do know
the
you're
club
out there.
President would... Kindly go through the archives.
We're curious. Anyway.
So, yeah, I'm going to say trash. I'm going to say instead, I'm going to give two recommendations on both ends. The more artistically satisfying, pleasing cinematic experience, and also the more just I want to see a lot of fighting. Give me the fighting and make me feel awesome. For that, I'm going to recommend a similar plotted story about a kung fu or martial arts legend who has to fight against incredible odds and incredible racism to become the man he needs to be, and that is Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bloodsport.
Yes. The best film ever made by...
Bolo Young in all of his awesome pec flexing, intermittent... Peck flexing.
I love Bolo.
I
Bolo Young is...
also in Enter the Dragon.
In everything. Any kung fu movie from about 70 to 95, probably.
Ish,
if there's a burly Chinese man, it's Bolo.
It is.
Bolo is his actual name, right?
It is.
It's his character name in Bloodsport, too, isn't it?
I believe... his name's Chong Li.
Chong Li, that's right. Street Fighter.
Nerd!
For anyone...
Chong Li.
Chung?
Chong.
Chong. Chong Li.
Chun Li is, Street Fighter. Chicken Spree Street Fighter.
I'm so glad you said Bloodsport. I frequently, and half sarcastically, half earnestly say Bloodsport's the best movie made by man.
I love it so much.
No, it's awful.
Kumate. Kumate.
Kumate. Oh, God. Bloodsport's a piece of shit, but it's the best piece of shit.
That is the definition. Looks at me like I have six legs.
That is the definition of good trash. I'm so glad. Dubois. Oh my God, Frank?
Frank Dukes. And so...
Learning to be an American fighting in Japan.
It's just good stuff, and recommend it. If you like some kung fu action, just mindless popcorn chomping stuff, there's that. Now, on the other hand, if you want something...
I'm sorry, before you move on, I gotta talk about... There's a great... I'm sorry, I'm so excited you said Bloodsport. There's a great scene at the end of Bloodsport. Frank Dukes, in the heat of battle against Bolo... and in an opportunity to avenge his friend's injury, is blinded and must recall his training from his master about how to
showing
fight.
Showing a montage.
Shocker. Yeah. To remind him that he learned how to fight blind as a young man, and he has to fight blind. And whoops the shit out of Bolo. God, it's so awesome. This is one of my father's favorite movies. One of my father's favorite movies was Bloodsport. I've seen it probably 100 times. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, so, yeah, golly, that movie's fun. I'm just saying. And I got a feeling there is some love for Bloodsport, and I would love to just hear just your vote of support
just
for the Bloodsport on Facebook.
Also,
because
from Revenge of the
Nerds. Mostly Arthur checks that. So, Arthur, where's that at?
You can find it at www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast, one word.
But wait, kids, there's more. I have a second suggestion.
He does.
The second suggestion, more cinematic, but also kung fu, more deep and thoughtful, and that is Ang Lee's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Great movie.
Love it. All kinds.
Great movie.
It is so much fun, and the kung fu is amazing. The rope work, it becomes a artifice unto itself.
Wire fu movie.
There is a lot of wire work that goes on in the movie that we just watched, Fearless, but...
Not a whole lot.
I mean, I see it, and I know it, and I see that it's there. This, on the other hand, says, look what we're doing. We're going to turn that wire work into ballet.
Yeah.
And... It does something different.
It takes a moment for you to just be like, oh, so everyone in ancient China can fly. Okay. And you just got to be okay with it.
You know, a similar film is The Musketeer, which is a wire fu version of The Three Musketeers.
Actually, kind of a cool movie. Not great.
I dig it.
It's kind of cool, though.
Except for there's like a mush of D'Artagnan and the other three.
Yeah.
And so it does not do well in the whole character development department. Which makes me sad because my favorite is Aramis, for obvious reasons. And
is he a booze hound?
Because he's a priest. That's Porthos.
Oh, Porthos is the booze hound. Porthos is my favorite.
Which makes complete sense.
Which one was played by Kiefer Sutherland?
Kiefer Sutherland played Athos.
Athos.
And the moody one.
Porthos was played by,
that fat guy who's in Simon Birch.
That awesome guy. Oh, you kidding me? Oh, God.
And Aramis was played by Charlie Sheen.
He was.
Though I have to say, you used the wrong point of reference, sir.
The proper point
of reference is Man the Iron Mask.
Really?
Which when Gabriel Byrne plays D'Artagnan.
Gabriel Byrne is awesome.
John Malkovich plays Athos.
Oh, that's right.
And the amazing Jeremy Irons plays Aramis the Priest.
Oliver Platt.
And Porthos is played by Gerard Depardieu.
Awesome.
And so that's a much better Musketeer film.
Does Man in the Iron Mask take place after the Three Musketeers?
Yes.
Okay, because I was about to say, I was like...
no more Richelieu.
What's his face is a little old to be playing D'Artagnan.
So, yeah, Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne. I do love Gabriel Byrne. Anyway.
See, you can see how disinterested we are in the movie Fearless, because we really want to talk about Three Musketeers movies.
Are any of the Three Musketeer movies streaming?
I know The Men of the Iron Mask is streaming on Amazon Prime, but I don't know.
I don't think I've seen any of them there.
I haven't looked.
Okay.
Nonetheless, moving on. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, beautiful wire foo, some depth, some spirituality.
A lot of it.
And
some romance.
Some romance, a whole lot of other stuff going on. Chow Yun-Fat is awesome! And
Chow Yun-Fat is, he's probably one of the best martial artists. He was one of the best, you know, he definitely surpassed Jet Li and Jackie Chan. For a brief moment, I think he was making way better movies than they were.
I mean, if you want to talk chronologically, yes. At his peak, the Chow Yun-Fat does not compare to peak Jet Li.
I'd say that's, I don't know, man. Hard Boiled is great.
I will
a little gun-fu for you.
I will accept a divergence of opinion as opinion on that, but I'm going to say Jet Li really is the man.
Yeah.
When it comes to kung fu on film.
Hero is pretty great.
Man alive. So, those are my recommendations. Let's move on, shall we?
We got distracted.
To our game. Because Dalton and I are really kind of into kung fu, I'm just saying. Because we are skinny, weak,
I'm
going
to start taking
guys.
Kung fu. That's all there is to it. This has renewed my love of kung fu. If
my son.
Is he wanting to now?
He said, well, his asthma is miraculously cured.
Oh,
by training.
Man. I bet he loved that.
Oh, and I'm like, dude, does it really work that way?
I mean, it does for some people.
Yeah, probably, but not this one.
My dad got over his asthma.
It's his activity-induced asthma. I'm just saying. I say I love you. All right, moving on.
Fearless, though, if anything, has renewed my interest in kung fu, and that's all there is to it. I'm gonna start taking kung fu. I'm doing it.
I support you in that endeavor. Let's talk about our game, which is our favorite action fight sequence.
Not necessarily kung fu fight.
Not necessarily kung
fu. Although they might be.
And so I begin to my right. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what are your favorite action fighting sequences in cinema?
Thinking of this game kind of really shed the light on how little I watch action-y films. I mean, there's the occasional... You know, I mean, comic book movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, but those aren't really
that's just robots
fighting.
Smashing each
no,
other.
We all know Christopher Nolan can't direct a fight scene to save his life.
I wish he could. He can't direct a fight scene if they're covered in rubber.
There
which
we go.
Is a limitation of that suit.
Yes.
That's
regardless.
Fair.
Regardless. So I went with Warrior. I really love this movie a lot. And I think it has some fun fight scenes in it.
I haven't seen it.
Hitting.
You really?
Haven't.
I confess.
We should probably watch that one because it's good. It's good trash.
I own The Wrestler,
that's
which I also
too.
Haven't seen.
That's got. Oh my gosh.
You haven't
seen The Wrestler?
I just
don't.
Buddy.
You have to watch that one side by side with Black Swan. There's a companion piece thing going on.
Except
anyway.
Wrestler's way better than Black Swan.
Think so?
Oh man, hands down.
I like the psychological thing.
I like Wrestler a lot.
Wrestler's good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Regardless.
The Warrior.
So Warrior. Warrior's on there.
Which is not the same as Warriors. Which is
no.
Freaking awesome.
Potentially, I can't speak for that. The other one, I'm going to throw out there, is Inception by Mr. Nolan, so I will give him this.
That hallway fight.
Oh, that hallway fight
the
with
hallway
the upside down and the wires.
Levitt
and
the turning hallway.
That's badass.
Probably because it's Levitt.
Well, you know Nolan can.
No, it's just a good.
So clearly Nolan can direct a fight scene.
He,
it happens.
Well, he can direct the hell out of an action scene, and that action scene just happens to heavily feature some fight.
Yeah,
I think.
Fair enough.
I think that, because... Dark Knight. I mean, I think the Batman and Bane fight wasn't bad.
No, it's pretty. It's really great until you watch it for the fourth time. And you realize it's all right hooks.
Yeah, potentially
it's. I think it's.
Match.
You know, it's
a weak boxing match.
It's that Batman costume. Man, it's hard to move in it.
That and in this may have been partially some of the cinematographer's fault, but in Dark Knight, I think when he has the fight with Scarecrow and the Batman, lackey peoples, it's just really choppy and it doesn't work.
Well, I like the one. I kind of like that one because it's. I think it's supposed to be you're seeing it from everyone else's point of view rather than Batman's, and it's how Batman appears to other people. Is he's a flash in the night, literally.
Yeah.
Before you know what happened, you already have a concussion, a broken leg. Which
Batman's ninjutsu thing.
Yeah, Batman's no kill rule is a little screwed up considering he's literally crippling people for life. But that's a conversation.
But they can,
cars on the
but
highway,
they, can they can live out their years.
In an iron lung.
And thinking maybe if their brain is still functioning about the wrongs they did.
The wrongs they did. But anyway, great call.
After doing some research, I thought of Empire Strikes Back, the sword,
oh
the lightsaber battle with Luke and Darth.
It's awesome.
And
my
something,
heart thinks that's awesome.
Something really important happens in the series at that moment in the fight. If anybody has been living under a rock for about the last,
hey, Darth 40 Vader years. Is Luke Skywalker's dad.
There, we said it.
I want to say this to you, Arthur. I want to ask you a question about that because I am emotionally moved by the Empire Strikes Back lightsaber duel, more than any of the lightsaber duels I see in any of the Star Wars films, prequels, sequels, all of it. However, technically, as far as just good old-fashioned kung fu fisticuffs, yeah, do you find that dramatic difference between the prequels and the sequels to be significant as far as your enjoyment of the actual fighting?
I actually want to speak to that.
Well, let him go first.
I will, but it's on my list to talk about it. It's interesting.
Are you saying there's an emotional connection to the old series?
I think that's why I like it better. It's only emotion, because if I was evaluating purely on action...
Well, that's fair. I mean, if you sat down with someone who knew nothing about cinema, and you let them see Star Wars in this day and age for what it is, I think they'd laugh at it as a B-movie. You have good to better than average acting. You know, your story is really the only savior for the trilogy. But, I mean, acting, you know, especially effects now, looking back, things like that. But I meet so many people who didn't grow up watching the original trilogy that don't laugh at the new trilogy. Like, mm-hmm. they like them or they'll drop their hat to watch them.
They dig on Jar Jar. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
I mean, partially, it is, I think, an emotional connection just growing up and watching these. But for me, I can't. I mean, it would take a lot for me to sit through the new trilogy because I think they're that bad. And I mean, I don't even care. I mean, we talk probably, you know, you probably connect with Yoda when he comes in and just does his Yoda thing.
Which is pretty awesome.
But that's because it's Yoda, and we've never got to see Yoda do his thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, you knew he could do it, but to finally see it, I think that's why that's so memorable.
Well, I want to say, you know, if I was really thinking this in a technical kind of a kung fu nerd kind of way, the Qui-Gon / Obi-Wan Darth Maul fight is superior to the Luke Darth fight.
It's choreography fantastic. Is probably leads ahead. Yeah.
That's actually it's,
and then I find it to be problematic because I still would rather watch Empire, but I wonder if I would rather watch like it purely out of nostalgia or because it's a better movie.
It's interesting. Everything else, I mean. I mean, you look at the special effects. The special effects are light years ahead of the original trilogy. Well, everything, I mean, acting-wise, I mean,
parsecs you have names. Ahead, if you will.
Make that Kessel Run. guys, I'll be right back. I got to go to Tosche Station and pick up some power converters.
Man, I was going to go. It's the whiniest Luke voice ever.
It's really funny this came up organically, though, because this is I put in my brain to talk about this, and that is... Really, the lightsaber fights in the prequel trilogy are amazing. They're truly fantastic. So, I just think it's funny this came up organically.
Star Wars invokes conversation. The last, I got one more thing to mention, and hopefully we won't get sidetracked again.
Sorry.
Mine's actually going to come from a TV show that I really enjoy, and that's Sons of Anarchy.
Great show.
And in season 5, the most recent season to air, there is a pivotal jail fight, Guardian-esque challenge that happens in which Opie, arguably probably one of my favorite characters from the show,
fantastic,
takes center stage.
And, Ryan Hurst, great actor.
Yeah. And it's not a choreography thing here, and it's something Dalton kind of had the epiphany of before. It's the emotional pull of this fight. Yeah. It's that. It's heart-wrenching, and it gets you. And that's why it's so impactful to me. It's not a choreography thing, and wow, that's awesome looking. It's what they were able to do emotionally through a fight scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we talked about it off air briefly.
Excellent choices all, sir. I appreciate that. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what do you bring?
Well, anyway, as I was saying, it's great that the Star Wars films came up organically. Because I've been thinking about them. And really, the fight choreography in the prequel trilogy is astonishingly good. And I would say that the Qui-Gon Jinn Obi-Wan Darth Maul fight is probably one of the best sword fights. I mean, if you just pretend they're not lightsabers, it's a sword fight.
Right.
It's probably one of the best sword fights on film.
I mean, ever.
In terms of technicality?
Yeah. Ever.
And technically speaking. Mm-hmm. Not, I mean, you know, Phantom Menace is not a good film. It's an okay film. That lightsaber fight, that sword fight, is amazing.
Yeah, it's the best ever.
Are you okay? You're with me. I thought you were challenging.
No, ever.
It's great.
I'm emphatically
agreeing. Even in terms of the pacing, it does some really cool things with the story. And I think they actually George Lucas, the man, crazy man that he is, has actually justified why the fight scenes are so much cooler in the prequels, and it's in-universe kind of interesting, and it kind of makes sense. The idea being that the only people who still know how to fight with a lightsaber after, you know, the big calamity between 3 and 4...
Order 66.
Order 66 are an old man and a robot. Or a cyborg and an old man. A couple of very old men.
You think he means old Ben Kenobi?
I'm so happy. Oh, God. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting in-universe explanation. No. Interesting in-universe explanation. Yeah,
I never heard him say that, but I always assumed it.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. It makes sense. But anyway, that's a great fight scene, and yeah, probably one of the best ever. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. But I got a couple I want to rattle off.
Yes, by all means.
The Crazy 88 fight in Kill Bill Volume 1. Great throwback to 70s Kung Fu, that Kill Bill Volume 1 is. I mean, it's great. That Crazy 88 fight is phenomenal. It's awesome. And I think that's a film that really does a good job of working around, you know, you fill the fight with stunt people who know martial arts, and you give your actor just enough training to fake it.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up with a cool fight scene. Similarly, obviously you can't talk about fights in modern film without talking briefly about The Matrix, but I'm going to pick a fight that most people wouldn't from the trilogy, and that's the training fight between Morpheus and Neo. And again, for kind of the same reason I like a Kill Bill fight, is it is a throwback to 70s martial arts films. Very much in, you know, the... I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
And then, you know, they've got their gis on, you know, traditional karate garb. And it's just a cool fight. And, you know, this learning yourself, and it's the great master-student moment. It's really great. And, of course, Old Boy, the hallway fight. I didn't want to pick a fight from a non-martial arts movie, though, or a non-action movie. Old Boy's very much drama. That hallway fight's great. And then, of course, in terms of long fights, much like Old Boy, you can't talk about long fights without talking about They Live. And the scene between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Keith David. Have you guys seen
They Live? I have seen, yeah.
Oh, my God. That fight scene's awesome.
It's a treasure.
I just thought of a movie.
Yeah.
Haywire has some incredible fight scenes.
Oh, it's got great fight choreography.
I forgot all about it.
Yeah, that's a great one. Which is another example of using, getting people who actually know what they're doing, and it really shows in a fight scene. But They Live has got the craziest... if you've ever seen the Cripple Fight episode of South Park, you've seen the They Live fight. But I thought long and hard... and then, oh, I'm sorry, the hero fight. We talked about hero.
Yeah.
There's a fight in the rain that is probably one of the best martial arts fights ever. It's just so beautiful. You know what you're seeing I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. In the rain.
It's great. There's just so many good options. I could go with the fight from Roadhouse, my namesake, in which Dalton, played by Patrick Swayze, is threatened in the best 80s fight ever. He's wearing sweatpants in this fight and is threatened by the douchebag who says, "I used to fuck guys like you in prison." And in retaliation, Patrick Swayze rips his throat out with his bare hands.
It's something
it's
to
amazing.
See.
It's amazing. 80s movies.
It's terrible.
But what I ended up going with, I say all of those to say this. It's a movie I talked a lot about last year, but it's The Raid Redemption.
Yeah, I thought you might say that.
That movie is a great fight scene from start to finish. It truly, it literally...
90-minute fight
scene. The whole movie is a great fight scene.
I need to watch it.
Everyone in that film knows martial arts. And is a pretty good actor, too, actually. There's a couple in particular. The fight between the Mad Dog and the Sergeant is great and emotionally impactful. The final boss fight is really cool. There's a hallway fight in that one that's really cool. Basically, the whole movie. So I'm going to say The Raid Redemption. You know, I listed a bunch, and I was like, that's it. It's just awesome.
Excellent. I think those are great picks. I'm going to name an entire film also.
Yeah.
And that is The Rundown. Starring The Rock.
That's actually, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I don't know if it's more the editing and the film directing than it is the fighting, but there's some great capoeira, which is Brazilian martial arts.
Dance fighting. It's so cool.
It is amazing in that movie. And so there are a few scenes of that, but the entire movie is a kung fu fighting, amazing agility work of art.
It's really
Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy. Christopher Walken. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Christopher Walken fights with whips. It's so cool.
When I think of that movie, I always think of The Rock leveling a guy with a mixing board.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
The turntable.
It is so good. So I want to just name that entire scene or the entire film, rather. Yeah, because, I mean, wow. Just like The Raid is an entire film of amazing fighting. The other thing I'd want to name, I have three. The other thing I would name, also in the Matrix trilogy, is the Burly Brawl. In the part...
From part two.
From part two in The Matrix Reloaded, where Neo fights a million Smiths on a playground.
It's pretty sweet.
And I know CGI. I know there's going to be haters out there. But listen, gang. It is amazing what goes on inside of that film.
From a choreography perspective, from a technical perspective, the fact that they were able to pull it off with as little CGI as they used...
Yeah, it is incredible stuff. I mean, when Neo picks up the volleyball net, or the probably it's a probably
it was like
tether
a stop,
ball.
It was like a stop sign.
It's like a tether ball.
Oh, yeah,
pole.
It's a tether ball pole.
Pulls
right.
it up out of the ground and uses the weighted end and breaks off all the concrete.
It just,
it is incredible against a billion Agent Smiths. And I
whole lot of whoop ass going on.
I tell you what, I've watched that scene on repeat. It's just, it's really, really incredible. But I'm going to say the most gut-wrenching, again, we're talking emotional, we're talking a film that is meaningful, and we're talking just a fight scene that is all out, and you believe the warfare going on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Viggo Mortensen's naked fight scene.
The knife fight.
In Eastern Promises.
Yeah.
Because... Holy cow, dogs and sheeps and goats. Now, I do not love me some naked Viggo Mortensen hiney, but...
That's a beautiful man. I don't know what you're talking about.
He is a handsome man, and I will not lie. But that scene is ridiculous. And his performance is something to behold, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you could really fall back on the sister film to that... History of Violence.
Yeah.
Such a good movie.
I mean, it's interesting to see a director, David Cronenberg, who's not known for action films, apply his you know, his technique, his craft to action scenes.
Right.
And the fight scenes in both of those films are so mm-hmm. gut-wrenching and just really compelling to watch.
It is visceral fight scene.
Very trying to capture a sense of realism, the brutality of a fight.
Yeah, all that pretty and beauty that we saw in Fearless is completely absent from both films. Especially, I think, again, the Eastern Promises scene. Mm-hmm. Because you realize the man is fighting for his life. Both men
mm-hmm.
are fighting for their lives. There is some gore, there is some blood, but it's not really excessive, especially compared to the rest of... The oeuvre of Mr. Cronenberg,
yeah, no
I'm
kidding.
Just saying. But that bit of battle that takes place is fascinating.
Very compelling.
Fascinating cinema. It is absolutely, you cannot tear your eyes from the screen, even though there's a naked man over the screen and you're completely heterosexual.
It is a lot better than the Borat naked wrestling match.
It's so funny.
Say.
God, I should have listed that. You know, I heard about that scene for years and I was like, that doesn't sound funny. When you see it, it is so funny. It hurts how funny that is. And like, you finally understand, oh, this is what everybody's been talking about. Because on paper, it does not sound funny at all. It's hysterical.
Well, now that I've died just a little on the inside,
oh my god, it's so funny.
Bring your favorite fight scenes to us via Twitter.
There's some good ones.
And where are we on Twitter?
Well, if journeying through the steppes of Mongolia, and you come to a mountain, and you climb that mountain, you will find an ancient man full of wisdom and knowledge, and he will teach you the ways. He will teach you the Twitter. And your Twitter will be stronger than the Twitter of all others.
Only if you follow.
At good_trash. Because we're the best around. Nothing's ever going to bring us down.
That's right. Thank you for the Karate Kid reference.
You're welcome.
That makes me so very happy.
You're talking about martial arts. How could I not?
Love me some training montage. I mean, that's what martial arts films really need.
That's what sports movies are about. That's, you know, the sports, the marriage of martial arts and sports films. The training montage.
Absolutely. Well, dear listener, we're going to finish this amazing gold medal winning, belt earning, kung fu extravaganza with what we end every episode with. That is what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. I begin to my left. Mr. Dalton Stewart, are you fired up this week?
I am. I saw Man of Steel. I like it a lot more than most people. It's kind of a mess, technically, or story-wise. But you
it's
know,
Superman, right?
Yeah, it's...
I haven't seen it yet.
The film is, in many ways, a complete and utter mess. And yet, it works for me emotionally and viscerally so well that I was able to overlook a lot of things that bothered me about the film, things that have bothered people so much that they have decried the film. But a lot of it worked for me. I also, Arthur talked about season 5 of Sons of Anarchy. I finally started watching it. I'm trying to get caught up before season 6 starts. It's awesome. It's really good. Season 5 is nothing to scoff at. It's good stuff. It's definitely probably one of the better seasons. I think 3 and 4 were both kind of meh, and this one's really great. Also, I want to talk about E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. Was last week, at which the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, the next generation of gaming consoles, were announced. And there was a lot of great-looking games coming out. Oh my gosh, Titanfall looks amazing. Destiny looks great. We won't get into that. What I really want to talk about is Xbox and Microsoft's new policies that they were going to enact on the Xbox. Things like you had to daily have an internet connection. Things that would vastly complicate basically anti-piracy measures, but also anti-game trading measures. That essentially meant that you didn't own the property you had. The video gaming has been in a weird place lately, especially with streaming games on PC, where they're not sure if they're selling you a product or they're licensing you an experience. And it's this weird gray area in whether or not you're actually buying the property of a game on disc or you're licensing that content from the publisher and the developer. And Microsoft's going to try and take that extra step and basically say you couldn't do whatever you wanted with your disc. There were a lot of loopholes you had to jump, hoops you had to jump through. You wanted to trade games, you wanted to lend and borrow games, and they hadn't been clear on what exactly that would mean. But the outcry from the fans, remember this, people, you as the consumer have power over corporations sometimes if we speak our outrage enough. And Xbox and Microsoft have reversed what they have said would be their initial requirements and weird policies they were going to have on the Xbox, because PlayStation and Sony were not going to have these new rules, basically, and because people were so outraged, they were basically trying to change the game on us. So it's really interesting to see the outcry that happened over E3, and I think Microsoft thought they were going to be able to get away with some of this stuff. Maybe they thought Sony would do some similar things, and Sony basically said, no, it's going to be the same as last generation. Microsoft was like, oops. So it was really interesting to see them this week come out and reverse their initial decisions about, you know, having to always have a connection at least once a day to the internet, which completely removes so many gamers from population. And they've even flat out said, you're shit out of luck, basically. And now they've kind of reversed that. And I think it's awesome to see, one, a company listening to their consumers, and two, consumers having a voice in the products that they want to buy, especially when they're willing to pay $500 for this product. I think it's really great.
Excellent.
But yeah, that was a big deal for me. I was really fired up and was expecting to come to this show to rant about it. And instead, I'm kind of pleased to see them changing their tune.
Well, I'm glad to hear it as a non-gamer, because it sounds more democratic.
It does.
That makes my heart happy.
Well, you know, if I pay for something, I want to own that product that I just bought. I don't want you to tell me what I can do with it.
Well, it reminds me a couple years ago, I remember there was a blurb in the news about, I want to say maybe Bruce Willis,
mm-hmm.
or somebody, he was asking, or someone, it had to do with his music catalog from iTunes. Like, if he died, where would that music go to? Do those licenses revert back to iTunes?
Hmm.
Or would he be able to pass those on?
To his estate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
And I can't remember what, like, I think they're ruling
Bruce
that it would
Willis
be.
Bruce Willis has music?
I think it's, well, like his library. Isn't he in a band, though?
No, the stuff he downloaded, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, like his AC/DC albums.
Gotcha.
Yeah, from iTunes.
Because we all know Bruce Willis listens to nothing but AC/DC.
I assume he does.
He marches to the beat of his own drum.
Blues.
Yeah.
Was a blues, little BB King.
Dear listener, if you want to construct a playlist that is on Bruce Willis's iPod, I would love to see that on Twitter. Please send it.
Listen to it all day.
Construct your fictional playlist. Go.
That's interesting, though.
Because I think the ruling was that music would revert back to iTunes or whatever, similar to what you're talking about with the gaming licenses. But anyway, first thing I want to mention is I just want to say rest in peace, James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Passed away yesterday, age
51. That was
51.
My thing.
Really bummed.
Just really sad.
Shortly after The Sopranos was named the best written television show of all time.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Go ahead. Catch up with it.
I need to watch it. Anyway, Well, first thing, last time we met, I talked about I picked up Stephen King's new book, Joyland.
Mm-hmm.
The last few days, I read that book, and it was well worth picking up and reading.
Good enough.
Very good. I was at Walmart here in the city. If you're in the city, there are a couple Walmarts around there. They have a display celebrating Warner Brothers' 90th anniversary. Some really good movies for only like $3, $3 to $4. They had The Green Mile, the deluxe, two-disc edition, $4. True Romance, really nice collector's edition, $4. Several nice older movies, newer movies. I believe Mutiny on the Bounty. Older version of that. Heat, two-disc special edition, $4. Some really good movies.
Heat keeps coming up.
Thumbs up. Heat. We're looking at you, Nathan.
The other thing I watched.
She's got a great ass! See, Nathan, I like that movie. Well enough to quote it, anyway. Pacino. Full bore Pacino.
What else has got you fired up, Arthur?
Sorry. I watched Mama last night.
Oh, yeah, with Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
What did you think?
What did I think?
I would like to hear.
You know,
you're fired up enough to mention it?
I liked it more than Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Del Toro's last production effort. I wasn't a fan of the ending. I think it's really the only ending it could have, the way they built the characters, or told us about the characters, I guess.
Yes.
More, I just like that Jamie Lannister's in it.
Who?
Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones. He's the guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it.
He's barely there.
Really?
I feel like
off and on.
He's got a Danish name that I can't pronounce.
Somehow he starts out as a main character, but then Jessica Chastain takes over.
Yeah. You know why? Jessica Chastain's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
She's awesome
very
in that.
Lovely and talented lady.
She's so wonderful.
And she's awesome in that movie.
She is. One of the saving graces. The kids are good. They got good kid actors, I think. Do some fun stuff. I mean, it's a lot of cheap jump scares. But, it follows that Del Toro pattern. It starts with a splash once upon a time. And then we get these two girls lost in the woods. And so it's a very Del Toro work, I think. His stamp is on it, at least.
I'm just going to keep doing it until somebody acknowledged it.
So
we were all trying to pretend like you weren't there.
It's a very unsettling trailer, I will say that. I got around to seeing the movie.
Yeah, I wasn't upset that I rented it for free.
Good to know.
The other thing is I've dropped cable.
Really? So,
I made that
you
decision.
Decided you're
welcome
done.
To my team, sir.
It wasn't worth the money or the time that I didn't actually use.
Mad Men and Breaking Bad are still in the air, gentlemen.
I was pushing. I could make it to the fall, and I can watch Sons and everything that comes out in the fall.
You'll get a chance streaming.
Nope. I gotta watch it while it's happening. I gotta be part of the experience.
I'm done with cable. It's not worth it. I'm gonna stick with Netflix and Hulu. And I think the compromise my wife and I made we'll go back to using the DVD feature on Netflix, which is something we had dropped when they. Did the
price
up,
which is ridiculous.
But I think that would be a more beneficial, and I use that more than I would
definitely.
Cable. So.
No doubt.
So, good decision, I think. So.
I dig it.
I support you in that.
Well, Dustin, what are you fired up about this week?
I'm a little fired up this week in pop culture. One of those things is the James Gandolfini passing. It's very sad. And it was fortuitous because I spent all day, the last couple days, watching Goodfellas and The Godfather again. Because I had to make my world famous, known only in this kitchen, but world famous, Godfather Goodfellas sauce for a little event that went on over here at my place yesterday, actually. And so I was watching those movies. I was thinking all those gangster-ish thoughts. Sir.
Do you do the full day preparation?
Yes.
It's the only way to do it, brother.
I cooked that sauce from 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 7 o'clock that night when I served it.
After we went to the film conference that we did at OSU and we saw Garlic is as Good as Ten Moms,
mm-hmm.
I thought it would have been really fun to do a similar documentary where the basis would be making that sauce for a day and talking to different
Making marinara sauce is a fine art, man. I mean, it's a simple recipe, but there's really a lot of love and a lot of that goes into it.
I think it would just be fun.
Dustin, we're
going to
have to swap recipes.
I would love for that to happen.
So
anyway, I'm fired about gangsters for no reason as far as history or events that go along other than I've been thinking about them all week and then the passing of the great Tony Soprano. And I'm very saddened by that because, honestly, that was his best performance ever. And I am saddened by the thought that there will not be a Sopranos movie or reboot. And it breaks my heart just a little bit. knowing that. So I just leave that out there. I'm also fired up in the horror genre a little bit, like Mr. Arthur Gordon. Insidious 2 has a trailer.
I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
It's awesome.
I'm scared, and I'm there.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah, we did talk about this, because we decided we're going to go see it together.
That's right. That's right. I finally got around to seeing it after we talked about it. And also, same production team, James Wan, is involved in this little film called The Conjuring.
Yes. Coming out. Also with Patrick Wilson.
Which I recommend that trailer highly.
Looks good.
Don't watch it alone or in the dark, unless you have someone to hold.
Those both look legitimately horrifying movies.
No, I don't know, because we know that trailers can be deceptive.
That's true.
But I'm excited. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what do you have?
Well, while we're on the topic of horror movies, there's one on Netflix I threw in my queue. I think it's called The Apparition, maybe? It looked like, I think it's a British horror film. I was wondering if you had...
I know no words of this.
It's in my queue, and it's a British horror film. It's kind of got the cover art is a girl kind of in a four-rose, grayish background, long, willy hair.
Like an apparition.
Yeah. So, I think it's called The Apparition, if I'm not mistaken. I could be lying. Someone is fact-checking me right now.
Right as we speak.
Take that, Romney.
Oh, God. Is it this one? This movie's supposed to be bad.
Which one?
Hold on. I'm pulling up the poster for you to look at.
We're going
to
find out.
It's got the chick from Twilight in it. Not Bella, but is it this one?
Nope, that's not the one I'm thinking
of. Okay, all right.
I'll get back to you.
This movie's supposed to be terrible.
Dustin, keep going. I'll talk.
That's fine. Actually, that's really all I'm really fired up about this week in pop culture.
Leave me out to dry.
But I just love some gangster movies, and I love what's happening right now in horror. However, what I want to argue for right now is for a return of the gangster film.
Yeah.
I want that to happen because I want to be fired up about gangster trailers. However, I have to say this one last trailer that does have me fired up, which is almost part of the way, almost there, to bring back the gangster film, and that is the Wolf of Wall Street trailer.
I haven't seen it yet.
Featuring Mr. DiCaprio and Scorsese yet again partnered up, and I got to say, I'm in. I'm all in. Bring it now. I want to see it. And it sounds like so much fun. I need a sitter. Please volunteer. Contact me on Twitter. And I would love
for
that
to happen.
I really
need Scorsese to make another gangster movie soon.
I do too.
It's got to be his next movie. I need it to be.
I'm sad because I fear that he's bored with it. I think, though, this is rumor milling. Can we rumor mill a little together?
Rumor
mill.
About what
Mr. Scorsese's up to?
Yeah, let's do it.
So he's working on Wolf of Wall Street. He's finished up with that, and that's coming out. But there is a rumor about a Catholic priest in Japan just before the expulsion of all the priests.
Mm-hmm.
Early on. I think late 19th, maybe early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of documentary film about that. And I got to say, I'm intrigued.
That's Scorsese's going to do?
Scorsese's going to do this. So I'm thinking kind of Age of Innocence meets Gangs of New York.
I could be into that. I could be into that.
So I don't know what your thoughts are, gentlemen. That is completely rumored, and I hope, and I pray.
Sounds interesting.
That such a film would happen, because I need another theological opus from Mr. Scorsese, because, as I mentioned before, my favorite Jesus movie, Last Temptation of Christ.
Are you sure it's not a Taxi Driver?
I'm sure it's not.
Okay.
Pretty sure it's not, because it's not actually about Jesus.
Mm.
I don't think Bickle really is a Jesus figure.
I
disagree.
Really?
Yeah. I think there are
some... It's not a Jesus movie so much as it is a Catholic movie.
I will say, okay, that's fair. And I will even say this, that Superman's not really a Jesus movie either. Though, my professor and dear friend, Craig Detweiler, was hired by Warner Brothers...
Really?
...to write sermon notes for Superman, for the Man of Steel film. I encourage you all, dear listeners, to check
that's
that
awesome.
Out. And so I'm very, very proud for Craig.
Hired by Warner Brothers?
By Warner Brothers.
I heard something
about that. Do some sort of Passion of the Christ sort of marketing to the evangelical market. And I'm excited about that, and I'm excited for Craig, because Craig Detweiler, that's his name, he's now at Pepperdine, no longer. Oh, I think he teaches some classes at Fuller, but he's mostly at Pepperdine.
People would be way more into the Bible if Jesus, drop kicked somebody into a skyscraper or a mountain.
Totally happens. Cast the money changers out. Look it up. The movie's called The Awakening that Mr. Arthur Gordon recommended.
Gotcha. Who's in it?
Speak a little about it.
Who directed
it? Well, I haven't seen it. I was asking if you had seen it.
No.
Because I figured it was up your alley. It's got Rebecca Hall and Dominic West.
Oh, I like
director
them.
Nick Murphy.
Wait, Dominic West?
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
This is not to be confused with the earlier mentioned Apparition.
No, which is apparently
just
terrible.
Ignore that movie completely.
Dominic West?
Yeah.
As in Detective McNulty? I'm in. From The Wire.
Ah, there we go. Okay, here's the synopsis. Here's the synopsis for The Awakening, a 2011 British film streaming on Netflix that may be good trash. We will find out.
A haunted boarding school calls on Florence Cathcart, who disproves hoaxes for a living. But the strange place leads Cathcart to question rationality.
McNulty's in it, dude. I'm sold.
It sounds like the premise of The Conjuring. I'm excited to hear this.
Well, I guess we're out of things to talk about.
I think we are. Well, dear listener, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sitting with us and talking a little bit about a movie that we were not incredibly enthused about, but about a genre in which at least Dalton and I were.
Dig it.
And we have a lot of good things to say about movies because movies are meaningful even when they're meaningless. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but it's totally true. And we would love to hear your feedback about that. And that can be found on the locations on Facebook and Twitter that we've mentioned so far. Also, Arthur, Dalton, and I also have Twitter accounts of our own. Dalton, where are you at?
I am located on Twitter at Dalton Stewart. One word.
Arthur, where are you at?
You can find me at RNDTBL Review.
Dustin, you are at Dustin _ Sells, S-E-L-S. And we would love to keep the conversation going. Next week, we're going to look at a little movie called John Dies at the End. Very new.
Spoiler, John Dies at the End.
It's horror.
That's the rumor.
It's a horror
comedy. It's comedy.
It's written, it's based on a book written by one of the writers on one of my favorite websites, crack.com. Fun fact.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sounds like a good combination
of awesome.
We'll
get to see Mr. Paul Giamatti, which is always a shining light.
And directed by the man that brought us the cult classic, Bubba Hotep.
And speaking of the greatness of Writers of Crack, thank you, Samantha, for what you posted on Facebook. We appreciate it so much. Let's move on now, and we're going to say, dear listener, good night, good evening. Thank you so much. Watch some movies. Have a good conversation. We'll see you on the interwebs, and we'll see you next time.